Our next speaker is Maggie Cruzy, who is a folklorist and cataloger at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. Before coming to the library 5 years ago, Maggie was a librarian in the Annenberg Rare Book and Manuscript Library and an instructor in the Department of Folklore and Folklife at the University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, where she received her doctorate in folklore in 1995. And just on cue, it comes up.
Thank you very much, Kate, for the introduction. And thank you all for coming this afternoon. It's great to see everyone here. All right. Okay. My title of the talk today is Access to Historic Field Recordings, the American Folklife Center. Oh, it came back to the last one. Thanks. Thanks. Okay. This is Access to Historic Field Recordings, the American Folklife Center's digital card catalog. Here to tell you about a project of the American Folklife Center that enables users to listen to field recordings from a search made in the Library of Congress online catalog. Our card catalog and the sound it contains now can also be accessed through many other routes, through Google searches, for example. The cards for this in this database will come up in a Google search. Through American Folklife Center website and through the Library of Congress Performing Arts Encyclopedia. But one of our project goals was to ensure that this project could be accessed from the ELSI catalog. And thanks to our colleagues in the library, and I have to mention especially Morgan Cundiff and Nate Trail, and we've been able to do this. So here's the catalog resource entitled Traditional Music and Spoken Word Catalog from the American Folklife Center. We have to emphasize that this catalog does not provide access to all or even to the majority of our sound recordings. Only about 10 or 15% of AFC's sound recordings are cataloged on cards. A little history here. This cataloging was done during the first 25 years of the archive's history. The Archive of American Folk Song, as it was first called, was established at the library in 1928. Robert Winslow Gordon, who made field recordings on cylinders, was the first archivist. The recordings cataloged on these cards begin with the collections made by John A. Lomax, Gordon's successor, and by Alan Lomax from 1933 to 1942. John Lomax was archivist in charge and curator of the archive, and his son Alan became assistant in charge in 1937. Lomaxes were often the contacts who provided recording equipment and discs for other field workers to make collections for the Library of Congress. Zora Neale Hurston accompanied Alan Lomax and Mary Elizabeth Barnacle on a field recording trip in the South in 1935. On the left in this picture, you see Myrtle Wilkinson, who was recorded by Sidney Robertson Cowell in Turlock, California in 1939. And on the right is Carrie Grover, a fiddler and singer from Maine, who was recorded by Cowell and also by Alan Lomax. Many of you are familiar with the Lomax's field recordings, so I won't give any more history here, really, but I welcome questions afterwards if you have them. The words on the door of the truck are Library of Congress Recording Laboratory. This equipment was used to make some of the recordings in the catalog, and this is the interior of the vehicle. The American Folklife Center has several American Memory online presentations that allow listeners to hear selected recordings and read about the context in which the recordings were made. One of these is Voices from the Days of Slavery. My colleague Guha Shankar has recently made this one available as the AFC's first podcast and can be downloaded from our site. Others from this New Deal era are Voices from the Dust Bowl, Florida Folklife from the WPA collections, California Gold, which is this Sidney Robertson Cowell WPA project, and Southern Mosaic, the John and Ruby Lomax 1939 Southern States recording trip, which is the sound that has been added to our card catalog resource. Before I describe the process of digitizing the cards, I thought I'd give you an example of how a keyword search would work in this online catalog. I got interested in the word doggone during the presidential election last year, when vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin was using it. So I searched for doggone, and I was surprised that it only shows up in one of Lead Belly's songs, Angola Blues. And here is the card for one of those recordings. But we have three recordings made of Angola blues in different times by the Lomaxes. And so the fact that we included the first lines of our search capabilities means that all three of these cuts would appear in a search for the word Dagon. And the top shows the default display, which is a card image, and the bottom shows a list display that is an option in this database. Okay. And this would be the bibliographic record, as it appears in our card, of the Angola Blues song. There's a couple of things I'd like to point out for this. I think you can see at the very, very bottom of the screen, you can display XML, the MODS bibliographic and METS object description of this record. Another thing is that we had to make certain decisions about what we were going to capture on the cards. And one of the things we decided was the first lines and refrains that were typed on the cards are recorded as titles. Another thing is, of course, Leibeli's name is spelled in many different ways on these three cards and just in general. So we have a controlled name field, which you can see on the card under singers. We also have a separation between the names, a names table for recordists or recording engineers versus performers. So you can search for people who appear in the database in different roles. For example, Zora Neale Hurston was a field recordist on some of these trips, but she was also a singer who was recorded by Herbert Halpert and by Alan Lomax in Haiti at the beginning of their trip in 1936. So you can do a lot of different searches on this database. And I'm sorry, I'm a little awkward with this machine. So, and one of the other things, we captured all the notes on the card. One of the notes is singer from Shreveport, Louisiana. And the AFC number is the collection which this card belongs to. And if you click on that link, you will get the display of all of the related cards from that field trip. So initially, a card was created for each cut on an audio disc. The first cards were typed by WPA workers. You may have noticed that there was a WPA stamp on the cards. As far as we know, this was the only cataloging work done by the Works Progress Administration at the Library of Congress in the late 1930s and early 40s. With the assistance of the library's digital scan center, we scanned the cards and made our first decisions for creating a database. After scanning the cards, we investigated OCR, optical character recognition, which unfortunately was not satisfactory for this project because there's so much handwriting on these cards. Some of them are entirely handwritten. We hired two part-time workers to enter the data from the cards into an Access database. We made sure that the fields on the records would be compatible with MARC because our first plan was that we would add these bib records to the library's online catalog. There's a lot of repeated information on the cards. Disc after disc was recorded in the same location with the same performers. And the repetition made the data entry easier. A few keystrokes would usually fill the field. So the data entry for this project took about a year and was completed in 2007 with not nearly as many hours as the WPA workers must have put in on typing. There are about 34,000 cards in the shelf list representing over 30,000 cuts on about 11,500 discs, plus a few early tape recordings are represented in the collection. Okay, now I'm going to show you the first card in the shelf list. You can see the shelf list number 1A1 in the upper left-hand corner of the card. It's the first cut on disc 1, side A. These are our AFS numbers, and they're used to identify the recordings. And this was the setup as it would have appeared in the Access database for data entry, and it's only a small portion of the form, which has quite a lot of fields that are further down on the page. And the form also has, at the top, you can see an additional tab, which is for information on corrections to the information in the database and other linking fields that we have on a second page. And you also see this handwritten note scrolled along the bottom. It says, note, this whole series was recorded by J.A.L. and A.L., that is Johnny Lomax and his son Alan Lomax, who was 19 years old in 1934 when this recording was made. Over the years, Alan Lomax and many other researchers, interns, and sound engineers have made handwritten notations on the cards, which is one of the reasons we chose to display the card images in the online resource. This first disc recording that was accessioned into the archive in this numbering system was recorded in San Antonio, Texas, and performed in Spanish. I wanted to note that there are at least 30 other languages represented in the card catalog. In 2006, my colleague Matt Barton gave a great talk in our Benjamin Botkin lecture series about Alan Lomax's field recording trip to the upper Midwest in 1938, where Lomax recorded ethnic music of Finns, Serbs, Swedes, Germans, and many other groups. Those discs were recently digitized at the Culpeper facility and for Jim Leary's project in Wisconsin. So one of the things we're hoping to do with this project eventually is add sound from some of the phonoduplication orders that we receive to the resource. Because of the diversity of languages on the recordings and because of the nature of field recordings, the songs have no fixed titles and singing is often accompanied by talking. Creating this card catalog in the first place must have been quite a challenge. Like the card for Angola Blues, this first card has the first line of the song and the refrain as well as the title. We also created a table to list the musical instruments. You can see the instruments on the right-hand side. We included things like hand clapping and foot tapping instruments. We also included a feel for venue and place, which included prisons, homes, the Library of Congress's Coolidge Auditorium, where Alan Lomax recorded Jelly Roll Morton, and the Elsie Recording Laboratory. So you can search for those places in this database as well. I mentioned you can search by performer or by the name of the person making the recording. Okay. The conversion of the database to MODS, Metadata Object Description Schema, and METS, Metadata Encoding and Transmission Standard, was the work, as I mentioned, of Nate Trail and Morgan Cundiff of the ELSI's Network Development and Mark Standards Office. They've continued to improve this resource, even as they have been called on to do dozens of other projects for the Music Division and for the Performing Arts Encyclopedia. To create the MODS bibliographic records, the MARC fields in our database were converted to XML schema language and matched with corresponding MODS tags. I'm going to show you next the document tree for the METS, which has the bibliographic MODS record contained within the METS wrapper. So this is the beginning of the document tree for Ain't Gonna Let You Humbug Me, Stewball. And one of the things we included a lot of standards here, we used ISO 8601 date standard and a lot of MARC standards in the okay, I'm sorry about that. I ran through it pretty fast. On this last one, you can see the link to the audio, the sample audio, which is in the METS wrapper. The project is innovative in overcoming the isolation of descriptions about archival collections materials in various data silos and also in various divisions in the library. 5 years ago, we had some recordings available online in American Memory, but virtually all of the information we had about those recordings was on paper, on the disk sleeves, on the recording logs and file folders, and on catalog cards. So we're bringing a lot of this material into public access that hasn't been before. In the early years of the, 5 years ago, there were only 4 collection level records in the library's online catalog for any of these discs. So the next step in this process was to create the collection level records. So each field trip or studio session equals a collection. The group of cards represents cuts on the discs. We did the MARC cataloging in the ILS and then I wanted to note that we use DAX as our standard for this cataloging. Then we, Nate and Morgan figured out that we could execute a query for all the cards related to a specific collection, create handles for each query, and add the query handle to the ILS record. Then there's a link to the cards and therefore to the sound. And in the future, we're also going to add images. There's many typewritten pages in the archive of song texts, just thousands of them, and we've scanned some of those, and we're going to be able to add the lyrics of the songs to this resource as well. So this is what it would look like if you did a title search for John and Ruby Lomax, 1939 Southern States. And then this gives you the brief record for the collection level. So there was 147 sound discs in that field trip. And the links at the bottom, one is for Southern Mosaic, which is the online American Memory presentation. The link at the top is for the permalink, LCCN, which has been a necessary part of this because we can link back to the collection level record and we can be outside the library's catalog. And then at the bottom, there's a link to search for the audio titles themselves within this collection. And this is what the display you get when you search for the cards. And there's 704 results or 704 cuts from those discs. And then this, again, is a bib record for that particular cut. Ain't going to let you humbug me that we showed the Mets for before. And on the left side, it says play MP3. So the sound that was harvested by Morgan for this is in MP3 format, and you can play from this, although I'm going to play one further along there. Let's see. And it's. I just wanted to make the point that we've come quite a ways from the dust jacket, which is the dust jacket for the same card. So at the top, you have Stew Ball, Axe Cutting Song, Ain't Gonna Let You Humbug Me versions. And you can see there was an arrow drawn to put Ain't Gonna Let You Humbug Me at the top as the preferred title for this on the card. Fortunately, they put both titles, so you can search both ways. But again, that was something that we felt was important to include in our database. I also wanted to make just a few comments about Alan Lomax's work in these collections, just real briefly. On the left of the screen is a picture from Alan's field notes from his Haiti trip in 1936, and it's his drawing of a voodoo altar. Although this has been a long time coming, the recordings are going to be issued by Rounder, I think, fairly shortly. And if you looked for these recordings in our card catalog, you would find that many of the cuts have four or five cards per cut, and it's going to be a source of confusion for people. It was because of the work that was done on these recordings early on. So we're really pretty happy that we'll have better notes for some of these particular materials. And I also wanted to show Alan in front of the radio mic because one of the things that's been fun to work on with this collection is seeing how much broadcasting affected field recording at this time. Alan wrote to Vance Randolph, for example, and asked him to be sure to record lots of talk and description of the people's lives because he was planning to use these and was using it in his radio broadcasting in 1940s. So I'm going to just sum up and say we harvested and we reused existing metadata, which were the non-MARC records in the American Memory resource, and we really is essentially reusing the sound from those early presentations and adding it to this catalog. In the future, we will include more sound files, photographs, and song texts, and we, as I mentioned, would like to use sound from phonoduplication orders and other sources as well. And this is great because we can't always make new online presentations. They are very labor-intensive, and we'd love to just be able to add the 1940s sound that John Lomax made as well. So I was just going to play this. This sound is on my computer here, but that's just how it would work. Well, it's thank you. And I can't just thank you all for coming. This is a thank you really to all the staff who worked on this. Jennifer Cutting, who is standing directly behind the card there, she initiated this project based on a request from a user in our reading room who wanted to be able to search the catalog online. And he also gave us some seed money to start the project, which was very helpful. And Michael Taft, standing next to her, is the head of the archive, and he's been reviewing, doing quality control on all of this database for months, really. Yeah. John Barton on your far right got all the cards scanned and worked with OSI to get the database started. And Nate Trail is on the far left, and Betsy Miller is in the back, and other colleagues. I wasn't there; I was on jury duty. But anyway, thanks so much for your attention.
Are the cards essentially what years ago was published as a checklist of?
Exactly.
Go beyond that?
Well, this actually goes way beyond that because when they published a checklist of the cards in the archive, and it's a very useful thing because it's a published volume and it's just a list. But one of the things that they did when they made the checklist, they made these editorial decisions to not include certain information. They crossed out the secondary titles, like Stewball is crossed out on that card, and it's not included. And they also crossed out the date of the month on which the recording was made. So while we were entering this data, we're trying to look under the scratched-out pencil to figure out, what was there. So there's more information in this research, plus it's more searchable.
How many sound files are available?
There's 639 right now from that one field project, and we have about 3,000 that would be ready to go to add right away total, and then we'll like to add some more.
Yeah. I noticed that in the original card catalog, it doesn't look like any specific information about the discs themselves
right. Are
put down. And then everything else seems to be related to the recording's location on its tape dub. Is there any information about the discs themselves being added, A, and are there any plans to do photograph scannings of the discs themselves? I see you have the sleeve, but it was an empty sleeve.
That's right.
Are we going to get information about the discs themselves?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, and it's something I wanted to mention. The discs are at the Culpeper facility, and we're in on the hill here. So as the sound engineers do digital preservation on these discs, we would love if we could marry that, both the physical condition of the disc plus the technical metadata about the discs to this descriptive metadata, which is really, these are just a descriptive thing. So we think one of the things about XML is you can import it. We could import this data into the computer. But it is one of the things that in our paper files, as I'm doing cataloging, I have almost no information about those disks, and I would love to have them in my hands. I really would. The cataloging I did at Penn, I had test pressings in my hands, and it made a difference in what I could do.
Yeah. And the other quick question is, you mentioned Robert Winslow Gordon as a recorder on cylinders. He also did do some uncoated aluminum discs. Are those included in the database?
They're not included in this database. For some reason, I don't think they added those discs to this.
Jim Smart showed me a notebook, handwritten notebook that he put what he thought were the descriptions when he listened to the discs,
right.
And I gave him some specific information about some of the recordings, but I don't think that information has ever been put into any. Those discs have a lot of broadcast material on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be good to have those available now.
Yeah. Thanks.
10-15%.
of in this catalog. We just don't want people to think this is it for the Folklife Center, because we have, of course, many, many, many hours of sound tape reels, many, many more, and then we have more disc recordings that were never added to this database for various reasons, a lot of times because they were in different languages. So we have lots of... No, they're not cataloged except for in our files at the center. So you have to come visit us. That's the other thing I wanted to say. While you're here in town, please come up and visit the archive or write to us. Thanks. Oh, I'm sorry, Matt.
Hi, Maggie.
Yeah.
Brad and I have missed your talk, for which we're very sorry. But Brad tells me that you talked about the Lomax Haitian recordings.
Right. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's sort of what I had heard, too. But we're waiting for that's one of the few big series of recordings that Lomax made that hadn't been released yet. So. Other questions?
So a big thanks to Maggie. If we have time at the end, we can ask more questions.